asked Christopher to translate. He spoke fluent French.
Some pair we are, Hugh said.
Mm-hmm. Sitting here all sad on the porch, while a dragon is invading and our dad is having a midlife crisis with golden chariots. Hugh grinned, and then his face turned dark.
Do one thing for me, he said.
Hmm?
Don't do to the girl what was done to me. Julie's will is her own. I've never forced her to do anything, and I don't plan on it.
Alara slid off the branch and jumped into the grass.
It's not all bad.
Hugh rose and walked toward her. I finished my tea.
Do you trust him?
My aunt asked by my ear. I trust the look in his eyes when he speaks about my father, like he's torn between loving him and wanting to strangle him.
It may prove foolish.
If it does, I'll deal with it, I told her.
Spoken like a queen.
My aunt ran her ghostly fingers through my hair.
I finally made you into one.
Too bad I've run out of time.
Is that defeat I hear?
Era raised her eyebrows.
No, it's reality.
We may not have the troops to fight Naeg, and we definitely can't face him and my father at the same time. The dragon hates us, but he especially hates him.
Are you asking me to persuade your father into an alliance?
If the opportunity presents itself. My aunt became still. Facing my father would cost her a great deal.
You ask much, child.
Is that defeat I hear? She snorted.
How is it you plan to convince him? She asked. Shame? Threats?
What was it Roman had said? Parents love to play saviors? No, I'm going to let you use those. If I do it, Dad will just see it as a personal attack and go on the offensive. He wants to be a hero. He wants to come in and save the day and be admired and loved for it. So I plan on being resigned to my fate, grim, grieving, and in a dark pit of despair.
So your father can be your lone ray of hope in the darkness?
Yep. She studied me.
You've grown manipulative.
You disapprove?
No. I'm surprised.
Good. Dad will be surprised, too. I've spent a long time convincing him that I don't do subtle. He doesn't think I have the brains to manipulate him, so he won't expect it.
You don't do subtle. Your subtle is pulling a kick so you don't kill a man with it, just break his bones.
I've learned. She waited, wanting something more from me. The word of Shara Tomb is binding, I murmured. That was what Era had said to me when she had demanded I swear to never rule the land I claimed.
I don't rule, but I am a queen. I claimed the city.
They all need my protection. They don't even know it, but they need me to survive. My voice sounded dead. So I'll lie and cheat and give up my pride. I'll do whatever I have to do to keep them all safe. I'm not my own person. Era stepped to me. Her arms closed around me. I couldn't feel her body, but I felt her magic coursing around me.
Poor child, she whispered, her voice so soft. I tried to keep you from it as long as I could.
I felt like crying, but it didn't quite come to the surface. I couldn't afford crying. I had things I had to do. Curran picked Conlon up and tossed him into the air. The sun hit them just right, and I saw an aura emanating from him, a faint shimmer of warm glow. My heart flipped in my chest.
He was so far gone. You encouraged him to become a god, I whispered into her embrace. I did. I'll never forgive you for that. You'll change your mind with time. No, I won't. I wanted to rage and scream at her, but it was Curran who'd made the final decision. I loved him so much, and even now he was slipping away from me.
A dull noise echoed through my mind, a silent sound. Someone had just tested my wards. I stepped away from Era, got up, picked up Surratt, and headed for the door. The warrior stood at the end of the street. He wore dark armor and held his helmet in his left hand and a gold chain in his right. I marched toward him, sword smoking. I stopped just before my ward. He stood on the other side of it. He was young, maybe 20, with clear blue eyes like two chips of winter ice, a line of tattoos running down one side of his pale face and long blonde hair pulled back with a leather cord. The chain in his hand was attached to a locket with a gemstone the size of a walnut that looked like pure red fire caught under glass.
"My lord extends an invitation," he said, his English stilted. "Come with me, and he will show you the might of his realm."
If my father had lied to me, and I went into Nag's realm, I could be trapped there forever, or dead. Behind me, Curran walked onto the street. I didn't have to turn to know that by now he was sprinting. If he got here, he would talk me out of it. We needed to know how many troops Nag had. Without it, we were blind.
"Kate!"
Curran barked. My father wouldn't want me to be stuck in Nag's realm at the dragon's beck and call. He and I had our problems, but he hated Nag. There was too much rage in his eyes when he talked about the dragon. He wouldn't lie to me, not about this. Curran was almost to me.
"Trust me,"
I called out. "I've got this." I would catch hell for this later. I dissolved the ward and held up my left hand. "Lead the way." The warrior took my fingers in his, pressing the stone against my hand. Curran was almost to us. He jumped, covering the last 20 feet. The world turned white, and then my stomach tried to go one way while most of me went the other. The white light faded. My body clenched. I spun around and vomited onto the rocky ground. Awesome entrance. So regal and impressive. I straightened. We stood on a stone bridge spanning a deep gorge. In front of us, a castle rose. Built with dark stone, it didn't have the elaborate spires and ornamental work of Victorian English palaces or German gingerbread castles. No, this was an Anglo-Norman square stone keep with thick walls and a forest of massive towers scratching at the sky. To the left, a mountain ridge curved down and away into the mists. To the right, a deep, wide valley stretched, bordered at the horizon by more mountains. Far in the distance, at the foot of that other mountain ridge, a lake caught the sun and glistened. The air smelled like pines. A cold draft slid against my skin, and I shivered.
"In his realm, you are a ghost."
Well, this ghost should have brought a sweater.
"This way,"
the warrior told me. I sheathed Surratt. We walked down the stone bridge to the massive gates. I couldn't see the sun, but the sky was light. "How long have you served, Nag?" I asked.
"Forever."
"What about your family? Did you leave anyone behind?" No answer. "Do you remember where you used to live? Was it here in Georgia? Was it in Ireland?" No answer. We reached the gates. "Are you sure you don't remember your family? You must have come from somewhere. What was your mother's name?" No answer. The gates swung open, and we walked into the courtyard. A second pair of gates creaked open at our approach. The soldier halted and pointed at the gateway. I was meant to keep going on my own. I marched through the doors and into a throne room, lit by glass globes dripping from the walls. The floor glistened. At first glance, it looked like glass, but no, it was gold. Melted down and allowed to cool into a perfectly smooth surface that gleamed with a mirror sheen. A man-made stream wound its way through the floor in a gentle curve, only a couple of inches deep. Gems lined the creek bed, gleaming in the water. Red rubies, green emeralds, blue sapphires, purple amethysts, light green peridots. A fortune in precious jewels, cast there like sea glass at the bottom of a fish tank. A throne dominated the far wall, carved from bones of some enormous creature into the shape of a dragon in profile. A red gem, the size of a grapefruit, sat in the dragon's eye socket. It felt warm and suffused with magic, as if it were somehow alive. I brushed it with my magic, and it sparked off my power. Wow! It was condensed magic, so potent it felt like a tiny sun. The anchor. The arrogant bastard had his anchor right there, just past his front door. Naeg waited for me on the throne, dressed in full regalia, his fur cape draped over his armor. The golden torque right. To his left, a long table offered a feast. Roasted meat, golden bread, fruit, wine. The aroma made my mouth water.
"Should have colored the water in your stream red," I told him.
"A river of blood," he said.
His voice enveloped me, deep and vibrating with power.
"It would be more honest."
"But you wouldn't be able to see the beauty of the jewels."
He indicated the table with a sweep of his hand.
"Please, sate your hunger."
Nice try. I did my era sneer.
"Really?"
Naeg smiled, betraying a hint of sharp teeth. The table vanished. "Okay, then." He stepped off the throne and approached me. I'd clocked him at about 6'6", 6'7" before. I was off by about half a foot. He towered over me.
"I wish to give you a tour of my domain."
"Oh, goody."
We strolled out of the throne room into a hallway of enormous arched windows.
"Are you a man or a dragon?" I asked him.
"I'm both."
"But what were you born as?"
"It was a long time ago. I do not remember. Some of us were born with talons, others with hands, but we are all dragon."
"What are dragon?"
"An ancient race. We were here when humans crawled out of the mud. We watched you try to walk upright and bang rocks against each other, trying to make claws and teeth."
"Yeah, right. You're not that old."
He grinned again. Tiny streaks of smoke escaped his mouth. "Awesome. If I got too cold, I could ask him to breathe on me."
"Why do you want to conquer?" I asked.
"Why would I not?"
"You brought me here to convince me to join you. So far, you're doing a terrible job of it."
"You're an interesting creature, daughter of Nimrod."
"The name is Kate Leonard. I'm not defined by being my father's daughter."
"But you're defined by your husband's name."
"I chose that name. I decided I wanted it."
His thick eyebrows came together.
"If you're not going to answer any questions, this will be a very one-sided conversation," I told him.
"Very well. I will answer your question. I want to conquer because it pleases me. I like to rule, I like to own, and I like to be acknowledged as the supreme power."
"Your conquest will cost hundreds of thousands of lives. Millions."
"Human lives?"
"Yes."
"There are always more humans," he said. "There is never a shortage."
We passed from the hallway into a massive room. Shelves lined the 50-foot walls. Books filled the shelves. Thousands and thousands of books. Some bound in leather. Some hidden in scroll tubes. Papyrus, clay tablets, Chinese bamboo books, long strips of animal hide sheltered by wooden covers. Above it all, a skylight spilled a stream of sunlight into the middle of the room, never touching the precious volumes. My father would kill himself out of jealousy. "Have you read any of these?"
"Yes."
"Were they written by humans?"
"Most of them."
"Then you saw into their minds. You know that each human is unique. Once you kill one, there will never be another one exactly like it."
Naeg stepped to the shelf and pulled out a heavy tome. Bound in leather and inlaid with gold. The writing on the cover resembled Ashuri script, but the ancient Hebrews wrote on scrolls, not in bound books. Naig stepped to the window. It swung open in front of him, and he tossed the book outside.
Wait!
I lunged for the window and saw the book plunge down and disappear into the mists somewhere far below.
50 humans wrote that book, Naig said,
and indicated the library with the sweep of his hand.
Is my collection any less magnificent?
I sighed.
Why do you care?
He asked.
You are more powerful than them. You are faster, stronger, better in every way. I watched you kill. You enjoy it.
I kill to protect myself and others. I don't begin violence. I respond to it.
Why not kill for pleasure?
Because I find pleasure in other ways. When I see people prospering and enjoying their lives, it makes me happy. He puzzled over me and resumed his walk. I followed him.
Why?
He asked. Because when people prosper, the world is safer. There are pleasures in the world that you have never dreamed of. Why do you read books?
To understand those I wish to subjugate.
Bullshit. You're stuck here, in a place where time has no meaning with nothing to do. You read because you are bored. He laughed. Every hair on the back of my neck stood on end. The sharp, cold punch of alarm hit me low in the gut. Note to self, avoid laughing dragons. If you conquer everyone, life will be boring and empty of all meaning. There will be no more books to read or fun conversations to be had.
It will take some time to conquer the world. In the meantime, I will be greatly entertained.
Have you tried actually walking around among people? We passed out of the library into another large room. Heaps of gold leaned against the walls. Coins, nuggets, jewelry. He was showing me his hoard. How predictable.
I have, when I was young, he said. I lived with humans for half a century. I've learned that you are weak, stupid, and easily cowed. Given the chance, you would rather fight each other than unite against a threat. I've never seen creatures who hate themselves so much.
Then you're in for a surprise, I said.
The twisted furry things you fought and killed, he said. My slave hounds.
The Yetimur.
Each started its life as a human babe. Each inhaled the fumes of my venom. Now they are beasts, primitive and filthy. They know nothing except rage and hunger. They eat their own. That is the true nature of humanity. I simply brought it to the surface.
Ahead, double doors opened before us.
Let me show you my power, he said.
We walked through the door onto a balcony. The valley below spread before us, covered in odd blue vegetation. I squinted. He passed me a spyglass. I looked through it. Warriors. They stood packed next to each other like sardines. Miles and miles of warriors, standing completely still.
Oh, God. My army, he said. In my domain, there is no time, no hunger, and no thirst, unless I will it to be. Here I rule uncontested.
They stood in squares. 2, 4, 6, 20 men per row. 20 by 20 equaled 400. How many squares? 1, 2, 3.
They sleep until I call them. They've waited for thousands of your years, but for them it is a blink.
21, 22, 23.
Their muscles are trained. Their skills are sharp. They live to battle in my name.
34.
I stopped. We didn't have enough people. Even if the conclave put every fighter they had on the field, we wouldn't have enough. I swung the spyglass left toward some dark brown stains and saw corrals filled with Yetamur, curled into swarms, piled onto each other, a horde waiting to be unleashed.
How do I know it's not an illusion?
I have no need to lie, he said. What would be the point? It would be a short-lived deception. Whether you agree to my terms or you don't, I will still field my army. I require sustenance to remain in your world, and I am ready for battle. You will see the size of my force when I unleash it. Nothing would stop you from turning on me if I lied.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of troops. Nausea squirmed through me. Atlanta was doomed.
You cook people and devour their bones.
Yes. It is faster and more efficient than devouring them whole. Eventually I'll consume enough, and will no longer require it.
How many people will die to reach that eventually?
There will be enough left, he said.
He stepped closer to me. His fingers rested on my shoulders.
You hate your father, he said. Everyone knows it. People whisper of it.
I also love my father.
Families are complicated. I loved my father, but I killed him and took his land. I'm giving you the chance to do the same. I need a guide to your world. You can be my queen. You are brimming with magic. I can taste it.
He leaned down next to me. The smoke from his mouth brushed my cheek. My skin crawled.
Our children would be powerful beyond measure. They would be kings and queens.
I'm married, and I already have a child.
Keep him. Keep your husband as a plaything.
His deep voice rolled over my skin.
I will help you kill your father. We will rule the world together.
And what happens to Atlanta?
He touched my hair.
The city is yours to do with as you wish. A wedding gift, if you like. I only require the slaves.
The slaves?
The humans. We can bargain if you want. How many do you wish to keep? I will give you the pretty ones.
Ugh, you're really inhuman.
Riches, power, the pleasure of conquest, pleasures of the flesh, pleasures of the mind. What is it you want, Kate Leonard?
To cut off your head. He laughed again, his hands flexed on my shoulders as if his fingers had talons.
I will give you 3 days to decide. 3 days of peace and contemplation. After 3 days, with the first magic wave that arrives, I come to conquer.
He had enough troops to attack the city from multiple fronts. We had no walls, no fortifications to stop him, and not enough soldiers to respond to simultaneous assaults. We'd be fighting everywhere, and I'd be crisscrossing Atlanta like a chicken with its head cut off, trying to put out the fires. I had to define the rules of this engagement before he tried to do it.
Meet me in 3 days on the ruins of my father's castle.
He raised his eyebrows.
Show me the entirety of your army. Let me behold it. I'll give you my answer then.
Agreed,
he promised, his voice rolling through the vastness of his castle. Smoke escaped his mouth.
That's my cue to leave.
Stay with me a while longer. I'll show you more of my wonders.
I've seen enough.
But you haven't seen me.
He stepped aside and slid the fur cape off his shoulders. His armor clattered to the floor. He stood before me, naked, big, muscular,
and with a champion-sized heart on.
Really? What was he thinking here?
I know you loathe me because I'm an inhuman mass murderer, but behold my giant erection. That will make you betray everything you stand for. I cross my arms on my chest. Is this supposed to convince me?
No,
he said.
This is.
He ran and took a dive off the balcony. Midway down the catastrophic drop, his body tore. A colossal shape clawed itself free, obsidian black, with a terrifying reptilian head on a long neck and two wings that snapped open. My heart hammered in my chest while every instinct screamed at me to run and hide and hope he wouldn't find me. He was bigger than Aspid. His wingspan dwarfed the largest airplanes I'd seen. The dragon swooped, banked, and dived under the balcony. A moment, and his head reared above the rail, two fiery eyes staring straight at me. He rose into the air, climbing straight up, his gaze fixed on me. It took every ounce of my will to stay where I was. His mouth opened, revealing nightmarish fangs. In his realm, you are a ghost. Fire burst out of his mouth in a blazing torrent and washed over me. The flames blinded me, passing over my body but doing no damage. I waited until he was done. When the flames fell, I stood exactly where I'd been before, my arms still crossed on my chest. The dragon's eyes studied me, and for the first time, I saw a hint of uncertainty in their depths. I forced myself to shrug and reach for home in my mind. The world went white. I landed on the grass, blinked, and saw my father, his face twisted with fury.
Shareem, what were you thinking?
Everything hurt. The pain wasn't acute, just thorough. Every cell in my body throbbed.
Are you hard of hearing, Shareem? Answer me. Shareem?
It dawned on me that he expected me to make some sort of sound. No.
Do you possess the gift of speech? Do you understand the words I utter?
Yes. I sat up. I was sitting in the clearing outside our backyard. Curran, Hugh, and Alara were standing only a few yards away. They looked like they were screaming, but for some reason I couldn't hear them.
Repeat back to me what I said about Nag's realm.
You forbade me to go, I intoned.
And what did you do?
I went.
So you deliberately disobeyed me?
Yes, Mufasa.
Do I look like I am in the mood for jokes?
My father thundered. When not sure what to say, stall for time. I had a role to play in this drama, and I had to think of exactly how to play it to push my dad over the edge. That is, assuming my aunt didn't chicken out.
I gave you a clear set of instructions. More, I explained why caution was necessary.
Curran took a running start and jumped. An invisible wall pulsed with bright crimson, and he bounced back. Did you set a blood ward around us so you could scream at me uninterrupted?
Yes!
Of course he did. Carry on, then. I lay flat on the grass. It was nice and soft. Come on, Rose of Tigris. Don't leave me hanging. If Era didn't show up, I'd have to rethink my strategy fast. He bent over me.
You went into the dragon's den. You could have died.
Ah, that's why the freak out. I'm alive. You're still with us, Father. Don't be so dramatic.
I was worried about you, you foolish child.
You were worried about your own survival. My father slapped his hand over his face.
Why, gods? Why me? What have I done to deserve this punishment?
Conquered, pillaged, manipulated, imposed your will on others,
murdered your children,
my aunt's icy voice said behind us. I almost cheered. My father went completely still. I twisted my neck and saw Era. She'd strolled through the blood ward like it wasn't there.
So it is true, he said.
The ancient words, lyrical and filled with pain.
You betrayed me. You made an order of assassins to murder me.
There was so much in my aunt's voice. Pain, anger, surprise, grief. It almost broke me. She could do it. If I had to swallow my pride and deal with the man who wanted to murder my child, she could deal with him too.
I never meant for it to be used.
Era raised her hand. My father fell silent.
We've destroyed our family, Im, she said. We've ruined it. We were fighting a war.
She shook her head.
Death gives you a certain perspective. We broke Shinar. It wasn't the invaders, it was us. We grieved, and we let rage blind us. We destroyed everything our family had built. Look at us now. Look at our legacy. Mother mourns us.
My father sneered. It was almost as impressive as when my aunt did it. Apparently it ran in the family.
Our mother has committed plenty of her own sins. This child,
Era pointed at me,
is our best hope for the future. How could you?
Roland raised his chin.
Yes, I know, she said. You bound her. Are you really that terrified of death? I did it out of love,
he ground out.
You did a thing to a babe in the womb that cannot be undone. Do you wage war on the unborn now, Nimrod? Is this how far you have fallen?
I got up to my feet and touched the ward. The magic clutched at my wrist. For a moment, the ward became visible, a translucent dome of red glass. It held for half a breath, fractured and shattered, melting into empty air. And Kern's enraged face greeted me. Here goes nothing. It doesn't matter, I said. I've seen Nag's army. He has thousands of warriors, enough to overrun the city and murder every single person who lives here. In his lair, a horde of Yetimur is waiting. He is taking an offering of newborns, and then he poisons them with his venom until they turn into those creatures. He told me that they are primitive and filthy beasts who know only rage and hunger and who eat their own. He says this is the true nature of humanity. He is worse than you are, Father. You seek to rule. He wants to exterminate us. You could hear a pin drop. I have no allies. I'm alone. It's just me and the city. No help is coming. But I'm the In Shinar, and I won't bow to a dragon. I will fight for humanity, even if nobody stands with me. I am Shara Tomb here. I'm responsible for this city. I won't dishonor my blood and my family. Kern frowned at me. Don't you dare ruin my speech. I pushed every button my dad had.
Neek is coming for us in 3 days. Atlanta will fall. We will die. Then you'll follow, Father. Make your peace.
I walked away and didn't look back. I sat on the porch steps and held a glass of iced tea. The ice had melted long ago, so what I had was mostly tea-flavored water. My father and my aunt still argued on our lawn. They put the blood ward back up for privacy, I suppose, which didn't do them a lot of good because I could still see their faces. All the arm-waving and finger-pointing was quite entertaining. Curran sat on my left. Hugh leaned against the porch post on my right. Conlon was inside the basement, surrounded by werebears and guarded by Adora and Christopher. my father would have to go through me and Curran to get him, and if it came to that, Christopher would fly him out of there while the werebears held Roland back. Dolly and Doolittle had left once I vanished. It was just us again, family and friends. Well, us and Hugh and Alara. My father clenched his fists. Light exploded in the dome, hiding him from view. It faded, revealing my aunt, her arms crossed on her chest. She rolled her eyes and said something. My father spun away, throwing up his arms.
I stand corrected, my husband said. There is another person who can drive your father as crazy as you.
This is the most human I've ever seen him, I said.
You're not alone, Hugh said, his voice flat. That was some speech. I thought you'd lost your mind for a second.
We need his army. I primed him for my aunt. If anyone can convince him, she will. We watched the drama play out in the bubble. My aunt switched to lecturing. My father pinched the bridge of his nose with his hand, looking down.
Come on, you selfish asshole, Hugh growled under his breath.
At the far edge of the lawn, Julie had parked herself, a determined look on her face. Derek waited with her, his face impassive.
How many troops does Naig have?
Curran asked. I stopped counting at 13,000. Curran didn't say anything. 1,000 wouldn't be a problem. 5,000 would be hard. They were armored, so we'd have to wrench them out of their armor to kill them while they spat fire at us. 10,000 was impossible. 10,000 troops. That's more soldiers than the National Guard had pre-shift, and Naig had even more than that. The bubble of the word fell. My father turned to us. My aunt walked over to the porch steps.
Your father has agreed to ally with you to face the dragon.
Aha. Waiting for the other shoe to drop.
He wants to see Conlan,
Eris said.
No,
Curran said.
I will hold my grandson, Roland said, and he will know I am his grandfather. That's my price.
Everything in me rebelled at putting Conlan anywhere within his reach. We couldn't survive without my father. It wasn't just his army, it was him. We needed my father's power and magic. He'd fought a dragon before and won. I felt like I was walking down a winding staircase. Every stair was a piece of my life I would fight to the end to keep. My friends, my relationship, each had a name or some concession I wasn't willing to make. My pride, my dignity, my privacy. Julie, Derek, Ascanio, Gastek, Rowena, Jim, Dolly, Curran. I fought for everyone. I clawed onto them, holding on with the edges of my nails. But in the end, I would surrender and step down in the name of the greater good. This was queenship. And if only I could find someone to take it from me, I'd unload it in a fraction of a second. The name of this step was, Never Let My Father Touch My Child. I let my magic out. It flowed out of me like a mantle. I decided not to bother with hiding it anymore. The power streamed out of me, branching, stretching, reaching. I became the center of Atlanta, the heart of the land I claimed. I sat on the porch steps, but I might as well have sat on a throne. My father felt it. His eyes narrowed. He blinked, and his whole being seemed to have picked up a faint golden sheen. This was no longer a conversation between Roland and me. This was a conversation between New Shinar and Atlanta. Two rival kingdoms negotiating a brief peace. What do you offer, Im Shinar? I asked. My father's eyes narrowed further.
The full power of my army and myself.
You will fight Naig until he is dead. You will honor our alliance for the duration of this war.
Yes. Kate, Curran said.
Don't do it,
Julie yelled from across the lawn. This was it. This was the last thing I had to give. I was about to place my son into my father's hands.
The word of Sharum is binding, I said.
Swear to me, father, that you will put my son back in my arms after you hold him.
I swear, he said.
There were lines even my father wouldn't cross. I had to believe that.
Atlanta accepts your alliance. Bring my son to me, I said.
My voice carried, slipping through the walls like they were air. I knew Adora heard me. Julie swore. There was a scuffle in the house. A moment later, Adora opened the door, put Conlan on my lap, and took one step back, her hand on her sword. Blood slid down her left temple, but she ignored it. Conlan blinked at the light.
My baby. My tiny sweet baby. Curran's gray eyes and my brown hair.
I pointed to my father.
This is your grandfather.
Grandpa?
Grandpa. Grandfather. Great king. My father crouched by me. In these few seconds, he somehow became everything a grandfather should be. Wise, kind, warm, and filled with love. If I'd met him as a child, I would have trusted him instantly. Carefully, I passed Conlan to him. His hands closed around my son. Everyone on the lawn waited, primed to explode. Curran paused in a half-crouch, a hair away from violence. Hugh bared his teeth. Adora focused on my father like nothing else in the world existed. Only my aunt seemed relaxed, standing by Roland's side. My father straightened and raised Conlan up. My son blinked. Roland's eyes were full of awe. A smile stretched his lips, a warm, real smile that reached all the way to his eyes.
You are a wonder, he said softly.
My aunt smiled.
Do you see the wild?
Roland asked her.
I do. You have no idea what he can do with it. Isn't he the most beautiful thing you've ever seen?
He is. Well done, my daughter,
my father said.
Well done. He is brilliant, like a star in the heavens.
Shit. The same look slapped Hugh's and Julie's faces. They had seen that expression before. My father liked shiny things and gifted children. It was the potential. It drew him like a magnet. He told me once that Hugh had been a glowing meteor he caught and forged into a sword. If Hugh was a meteor, my son was a supernova. He was like nothing else I had ever seen. My father wanted my son. He wanted him more than anything in the world, and if he took him, he would raise him like a prince. He would give him everything, and it would be terrible.
Conlan, I called. Come to Mommy.
My son twisted in his grandfather's hands. Roland hesitated. Curran leaned forward a quarter of an inch. My father took 3 steps forward and deposited Conlan into my arms.
I hugged him to me.
We have 3 days then, my father said. Possibly more, since the attack will come with the first magic wave after the 3 days pass. I shall come to discuss strategy before then.
He vanished in a burst of pale gold light.
Everyone screamed at me at once.
I hugged Conlan to me.
Grandpa is bad, I whispered to him. I won't let him get you. I won't.
That was one price I wasn't willing to pay. The magic wave fell. The technology reasserted itself once more.
Curran collapsed.
Chapter 17.
I cleared the space between us in a fraction of a second. He groaned, blinking. I wrapped my arms around him, squeezing Colin in, willing with everything I had to keep Curran alive. Don't disappear. Please, please don't disappear. Curran, look at me. Look at me. He didn't feel solid. Oh my God, it had happened. The balance within him had shifted. He was more God than man now, and the God part couldn't exist without the magic. I was losing him. Curran! I pulled magic out of myself and sent a burst of it into him. His gray eyes focused on me. I hugged him and kissed his lips, desperate. Stay with me. Stay with me, honey. The muscles under my fingers gained density. I love you. Stay with me.
I've got it, he said. I've got it. Just took me by surprise. That's all.
You shouldn't have eaten the last one, Eris said over me.
Thanks. That helps. He kissed me back. You can stop now, honey. I've got it.
I let the magic current die. The pain died with it. I hadn't even realized I was hurting until it stopped. Curran gripped my hand. I pulled him to his feet. He draped his arm around me. By the time we reached the kitchen, he was moving on his own. He sat in a chair. I kept my hand on his shoulder. I didn't want him to disappear.
Roland wants the kid, Hugh said.
Of course he wants the kid, Curran growled. He'll stab us in the back the first chance he gets.
They both looked at me. I know, I said. We don't have a choice. As bad as Roland is, Naig is worse. Naig is death and genocide. Roland wants to rule humans. Naig wants to eat us. The kitchen was silent.
We know Roland will turn on us, so we plan for it, Curran said. We're not going into it blind.
And even if we did get blindsided, there was always the nuclear option. My father couldn't live without me.
We need to solve the problem of Naig, Hugh said.
And his many troops, I added.
Not counting the Yetamur, Curran said. If I were him, I'd run the Yetamur at us first. And then, when we're softened, finish us with troops.
That seemed to be his strategy when we fought them in Kentucky. Yetamur are tough to kill. We can fight for hours before we ever touch his army, Hugh said.
Can we win this? Alara asked. Curran's eyes went cold.
We don't have a choice.
If we can get Roland to follow strategy, Hugh said. That's a big if.
He will follow it, Era assured him.
Do we even know where he is coming from? Derek asked.
My father's old castle, I said. I told him I wanted to behold his army. That's the only area around Atlanta large enough for him to field all his troops. I wanted to avoid attack on several fronts.
With any luck, he'll do what Roland does, Curran said.
Arrange his troops into rectangles and run them at us, I asked.
Mm-hmm. He's likely used to relying on numerical advantage.
And fire, I said. Don't forget fire.
He does breathe fire? Julie asked.
Like a jet of ignited napalm.
Can you hold him back if you're in your territory? Hugh asked.
Possibly. Curran leaned back.
We need to call another conclave.
The problem is we can't kill him, I said.
Who?
Curran asked. Naig. If he decides he's near death, he'll just vanish into his lair. A whisper of movement sounded from the hallway, and Yu Fong stepped out into the kitchen, dressed in jeans, a t-shirt, and a light brown hoodie. He looked no worse for wear. He moved with a slight stiffness, but his color was good.
I tried to tell you before, he said. There may be a way.
Everyone looked at me. Simon, I told them. He performed a ritual that let us talk briefly while Yu Fong was comatose. Each dragon lair has an anchor. It is the dragon's most precious possession, his greatest treasure cherished above all others.
they pour their magic into it, and it's the foundation of the realm where the dragon makes its lair, but it can't be destroyed.
As I tried to tell you,
Yufeng said,
we don't need to destroy it. If we can steal it for a time, the realm won't respond to Nag's commands. He will be trapped here and now.
Everyone paused, mulling it over.
Can you do it? Hugh asked.
No. I'm another dragon. Nag will sense the moment I enter his realm. Even if I could, I would not. The anchor is a thing of great magic that can't exist outside its realm for long. It will seek to return. It will take enormous power to restrain it. The temptation for me would be too great. If I touch that anchor, it will pull me into Nag's realm, and I have no intention of leaving this world. My place is here.
If not you, then who?
Curran asked.
You have a book, Yufeng said, about short people who sneak into a dragon's lair and steal his anchor. Someone small and insignificant.
I'm small and insignificant, Julie said.
No, I said.
Yes, she told me. Kate, I'm small, sneaky, and quiet. I have a large reserve of magic, and I know how to use it.
The child has a point, Eris said.
Everyone else is needed, Julie continued. You are the In-Shinar. Curran has to lead the Mercs and inspire the shapeshifters. Hugh has to lead the Iron Dogs. Alara has to absorb witch magic. And Yufeng can't do it because he is a dragon.
I can do it.
I'll go with her, Derek said. It would have to be done during the battle when the madman is occupied, Yufeng said. I know what will occupy him.
I raised an eyebrow at him.
Me, he said. The moment he sees me, he will attack. I will buy you some time.
One flaw in this plan, I said. How will Julie get to the dragon's realm?
Did you keep the shard of his fang? Yufeng asked.
Yes.
It will act as a key. I will open the way. The timing will have to be perfect.
Yufeng leaned forward, his gaze on me.
I repeat, a removed anchor seeks to reunite with its realm. Neither can exist apart. It will require great power to hold the anchor, and we don't know how vast Nag's realm is. We don't know where he hides the anchor.
The phone rang. Julie picked it up.
Yes?
She held it out to me.
Yes, Deck.
I took the phone with one hand, keeping my other one on Curran.
Please tell me you have something.
I do,
Gastek said.
I'll be right there.
I hung up and turned to Julie.
The anchor is the eye of his dragon throne. It's the ruby the size of a grapefruit located in the first room you enter once you cross the drawbridge. He is an arrogant ass. He doesn't think he has to hide it.
No heroics, Julie. Get in, get out, bring me the anchor, and I will restrain it. Gastek didn't want to risk bringing outsiders into the vampire stables. Instead, they had moved the Yetimur into one of the side rooms. It sat in a loop cage, staring at us with its owlish eyes. At one point, it had been a human baby. Atlanta had a lot of babies. Gastek, Luther, Simon, and Philip had arranged themselves around a table strewn with notes. Some notes had coffee rings on them. Curran sniffed the air. His lips stretched, baring the edge of his teeth. The Yetimur stench. I squeezed Curran's hand. He was still here with me. So far, the tech had failed to steal him from me. Behind me, Hugh grimaced at the Yetimur. He had insisted on coming. We had dropped Alara at the Covens. Now we were facing the Yetimur, Luther, Gastek, Philip, and Simon. The four experts looked rather smug.
We figured out how it was made,
Philip said excited.
Venom, Simon told me.
Dragon venom, Luther corrected. Applied very shortly after birth. Probably inhaled.
That remains to be determined, Philip said.
Concentrate, I told them, before they launched into another bickering session.
It's a dog, Gastek said. For all intents and purposes, it acts as one. A dog has to be able to discern commands.
However, according to all of Dombre's notes, the warriors never make any gestures, Luther said.
We theorize that the commands are subvocal, Simon said. They have extremely efficient ears, sensitive enough to catch a whisper.
I could have told you that, Hugh said.
How does any of this help us? I asked.
Wait.
Gastek pushed a key on the phone.
Bring in Subject B.
The double doors in the wall opened, and two journeymen pushed a second cage in, also containing a Yetimur.
Where did you get the second one?
Curran asked.
Bo Clayton, Simon said.
His deputies caught one.
The journeymen connected the two cages, locking them together. They gripped a steel handle, pushed it to the side, and the gate between the cages fell open. The Yetimur on the left scuttled over and sat on its haunches next to the Yetimur on the right.
They're us, and we are social animals, Luther said.
They are quite happy sharing the cage, Philip said. They sleep and eat together.
We had to ask ourselves, if they are controlled by subvocal commands, then what would be the exact opposite of that? Simon said.
Gastek turned to Luther.
If you please.
Luther nodded, reached behind the desk, and produced a set of bagpipes. You play bagpipes? I asked.
No, but it was determined via experimentation that of the four of us, I produced the worst sound.
Luther stuck a pipe into his mouth and blew on it. A piercing note screamed through the room.
The Yetimur screeched.
Luther blew on the pipes. A cacophony of sounds filled the space. Curran clamped his hands over his ears. The Yetimur snarled and ripped at each other. Fur and blood flew. Luther stopped. The Yetimur took a few more swipes at each other and broke apart, each skulking to its own corner of the joined cages.
We've tried over 50 different sounds, Gastek said. Bagpipes are the most efficient. We've attempted them 15 times, and every single time we've gotten the same response.
Suddenly, the bagpipes on the druid stone made total sense.
The sound drives them mad, Luther said.
It drives me mad, Curran said, his eyes shining with gold.
I looked at him and Hugh.
Can we use it?
We could, Hugh said.
If we could make the sound loud enough, Curran said.
Gastek looked at Philip. The mage smiled.
The Mage College offers 37 specialties. One of them is sound and light amplification. As long as you find bagpipers, we will amp their sound loud enough to wake the gods.
That's amazing, I told them, and meant it. All we had to do now was pull the city together and cobble an army to face Nag. We had 3 days in which to do it. It had to be enough. Atlanta would come together. We weren't just one thing, we were many. Shapeshifters, necromancers, witches, mages, mercenaries. We came in all shapes and sizes, in every age, in every human color, in every variation of magic. And from that, we drew our strength. We were surprising and unexpected, and we were united. Atlanta would hold its own. It always did.
Baby, Curran whispered into my ear.
I opened my eyes. I was so warm and comfortable, wrapped in him. As long as we stayed in bed like this, under the sheets, nothing could go wrong. The magic was up. It was day 5. We'd caught a lucky break, finally, and after a short magic wave on the first day of our 3-day timeline, the tech held for 3 days and 4 nights. The shift happened while we were awake, and Curran remained solid this time. The tech, like magic, flooded the world with various intensities. A strong tech wave could rip him away from me.
I lived these days in a state of constant paranoia. The rest of it was a whirlwind of negotiating, explaining, demonstrating, putting the alliance together. Between